Hey everybody, welcome to another Bald Move TV. We have started this thing and we're going to see it through. Who won the week? We've got Better Call Saul, we've got The Leftovers, and we've got Fargo.
Also some Mr. Science Theater 3000 talk. Which are you interested in doing first? Or which do you think the listeners would be more interested in hearing first?
Well, I can't talk about Mystery Science Theater because I haven't seen it. I know you watched at least one, maybe two episodes.
More than that.
More than that now? Okay. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, do you want to talk at me about Mystery Science Theater 3000 and at the audience maybe?
What would you want to know? If you were a old-time Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan or Riff Tracks fan and you hear a new season dropping on Netflix, what would you want to know?
I just want to know, are the riffs good? Like, are they as good at making fun of movies as they were back in the day?
It's a mixed bag. One of the things I've become uncomfortable with, especially with the Mike Nelson era and even in Riff Tracks, is there a lot of social commentary regarding homosexuals, trans folk, that nature that is over the line.
It's uncomfortable to watch some of those old ones.
And even the current ones, I think, because I just think they're just they're old white dudes from Minnesota that haven't really gotten very woke.
The Riff Track stuff.
Yeah, and I don't think they're not hateful. They're not like, it's just stereotypes that everyone was laughing at in the 90s, to be frank, and it's just they're still doing it in 2017. That's completely gone. Like this, there is nothing. I've seen six of the 13, and there's not been a single one. Also, there's a lot of taking pot shots at stereotypically masculine and feminine roles, which I'm not super comfortable with, and like annoys my wife as well. And that's gone in the new iteration. Thankfully.
Oh, okay. All right.
Jonah and I don't know who the other two guys that are playing, Tom Servo and Crow, are much better in that regard. However, they don't have quite the comic timing. And I think a lot of this, because if you see who's writing, there's like 15 writers, and like Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland did a couple episodes for them. And I feel like that one of the arts of doing the Riff Tracks, because we've done this a couple times ourselves with like some fan reward type material, is there's a certain pace to it. If you have too much commentary, then none of the jokes have time to land.
Right.
And in the first few episodes especially, I feel like they were talking too fast to cram them in between dialogue. And there's also an art to when you can talk over the movie and when you can't. But it just felt like the pace was too frantic. But still solid. And it helped that like the first movie, Reptilicus, is just ridiculous. It's like the Swedes decided to make a Godzilla film.
Awesome.
And the movie itself was very watchably bad. And then the second movie, Cry Wilderness, is maybe the craziest thing I've seen since The Final Sacrifice, which is, for my money, the best Mystery Science Theater 3000 of all time. It has a very similar relationship to, like, Troy and Zap Rousedower. They got a ridiculous, like, older hero and a young, kind of his young ward who doesn't... He's like, you think Carl in season two of The Walking Dead is bad? This kid's got – Carl's got nothing on this kid. This kid will run off in the face of – he befriends this ridiculous Bigfoot, and the guy – like he's wearing his Bigfoot costume, and he's got – his nipples are not covered with hair, and he's not wearing gloves. You just see regular human hands coming at the ends of him. And I guess Bigfoot's psychic. He can manifest in the kid's dreams, and I mean they use all this
stock. Sounds like some Pick a Destiny shit.
there's like all the stock footage of wildlife that they try to like weave into the movie in a very Ed Wood kind of way. So like the first two movies, you don't even need riffing to enjoy, and that I felt helped out a lot. Then you get into like my favorite, I think is episode 8, because I kind of started skipping around. The Loves of Hercules. Oh my god. It's an Italian take on Hercules.
Oh boy, I and bet that's just glorious.
And it's so good because Hercules, he can speak it's so clearly a lot of people are being overdubbed. And there's also a very famous Hollywood starlet on like in her mid 30s in this, like not a Mimi Van Doren. You'll recognize her when you see her. But she's kind of god-awful, and a lot of people are being overdubbed left and right. But not Hercules, because he can speak English. But he speaks it in, like, a stereotypical Mario. So it's like he's doing all this, like, you know, all these Greek words and stuff. And, and the guys are eating it up. Like, every single time they do a take on his Mario-esque Hercules, it's solid gold. And they've kind of slowed down. So I've really enjoyed that. The other thing is I was never a big fan of the host segments.
No, me either.
Like when they get the Mads involved, and I think it really helps that like Felicia Day, who I'm not a huge fan of, and Patton Oswalt are doing the Mads now. And I feel like that this Jonah guy and the robots are just better at it because and maybe the writers are better because I found the host segments very enjoyable.
Okay.
Like in Reptilicus, there was every country has its monster rap where they're rapping about all the different crazy monsters from all over the different world. And that was really funny. And they just got a lot like their invention exchanges are actually funny. That was a throwback to the old Joel era of Mystery Science Theater, which I guess he's now the executive producer of.
Okay.
Riff Tracks is now Mike, and Mystery Science Theater is now Joel going forward. And I like I said, it's an improvement in a lot of ways. Also, these movies are like they're all in high def. Like it looks a lot better. Like I've been so used to watching Mystery Science Theater like on YouTube or you know, just really low res standard definition, that just having these cheesy movies in high def really lets you appreciate how shitty the special effects are and stuff like that. So. I think overall it's a stunning return to form, and I cannot wait to see them continue on for it. It's great. They're all about 90 minutes long. It's perfect. Like, you know, it's kind of too early to go to bed, but too late to get into a full movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for that kind of stuff. I'm giving a thumbs up.
Cool.
For Mr. Science Theater.
That's good to hear. Yeah, I'm glad that there's, you know, something enjoyable from the quote-unquote interrupting segments, as I would think of them. You know, I always think when I think Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's the riffing of the movies.
Yeah.
And I always tuned out or skipped or whatever the other segments. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
One of the reasons I like Final Sacrifice so much, because I think the host segments, like when they all caught mullets, super funny. Tom Servo's a patriotic song about Canada that slowly got subverted is super funny. Like, those are the rare host segments that actually work. And Riff Tracks, just the part of this genius is it dispenses with the host segments.
Right.
It's all riffing.
Yeah.
This is like they got people that are fairly good at comic timing. Because that's the other thing. Mike and Joel weren't professionals. They were good writers.
Yeah.
But their timing and like just their on-camera persona I never thought was super compelling. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt and the Jonah guy, say what you will, they actually have a little bit of chops, on-camera chops. And I thought that was entertaining. There is a weird thing where every episode, do you know, God damn it, what is the – there's the big robot that's got, like, a long neck and it's, like, a big purple with a mouth. It's not Cambot. It's the other one.
No, I don't know.
Oh, fuck. I can't believe I'm calling myself a Mr. Science Theater fan. I can't say this. But she lowers some kind of basket about 5 minutes into the movie and says some kind of relevant quip. And then about 5 minutes before the movie's over, she comes and gets the basket out. And me and Cecily are like, what the fuck is this? I mean, the first time I just thought, it's like, okay, she's doing something. It's all will be revealed. But it's throughout the whole season that keeps this up. And I went online, and I guess there is something to that they're building towards, but Joel, and I don't know if it's revealed at the end of the season or it's going to something that's going to develop in season two, but there's some kind of Gypsy. That's her name.
Gypsy.
Gypsy drops what looks like a picnic basket in, like, if Jonah and the bots are sitting at the extreme right, she drops it like in the Jonah position on the extreme left. And then towards the end of the movie, she comes and gets the basket. The guys don't interact with it. There's also some really funny, because now, like, Tom Servo can fly.
Okay.
So he can, like, hover, and there's a couple times where he's done things where he interacts with the movie in a particular way. And a really hilarious thing in the Loves of Hercules, there's a couple topless scenes, and Tom Servo and Crow get drones out. and they start piloting the drones around, and they just the choreography of how they're doing this completely unrelated bit that but they completely cover the nipples and stuff.
Right.
It's just sort of like really top notch. Because that's the other thing frustrating about the Riff Trax crew is I feel like they have the mentality of a 12-year-old anytime something adult happens.
Right.
This was a little bit like, I understand you can't show nipples on Mystery Science Theater 3000, but it was a more than just a bunch of like, oh no, avert your eyes, robots, and it's just, you know, just they just wove it in. I thought that was pretty clever. So yeah.
Cool.
There you go. Who won the week?
That's a damn fine question.
It's much different competition this week.
It is, yeah. I think Better Call Saul had a return to form. I think that Fargo engaged me a little bit more. It was a funnier, more entertaining episode. And The Leftovers, you know. How can you go wrong with Carrie Coon twice a week?
Mm-hmm. Battling technology in both universes.
Right. It's a Nora-focused week, and Nora's an awesome character. And I really love that show. I think Leftovers, again, won the week.
I agree.
By a slimmer margin this time.
I want to look at it from this perspective.
Yeah.
Best moment of The Leftovers was individual moment.
Individual moment. I feel like maybe it was the scene between Carrie Coon and Regina King.
Okay.
When they're talking about the tattoo.
And leading up to what I think is the high point of the episode is the trampoline sequence with Wu-Tang in the background.
Yeah.
I think that's the best thing on The Leftovers that particular week. Although, Mark Lynn Baker, I don't want to, like, he was very, very and surprised. Like, if you told me Cousin Larry is going to generate genuine pathos and not just be a joke on the show,
right,
wouldn't have believed you. Best moment of Better Call Saul.
I'm having trouble remembering that.
Well, while you're thinking, I'm going to say that I think the whole sequence involving Mike and the Shoe was old school, watching Walt solve a problem.
A moment, but yeah, I feel you. That whole sequence was...
time when he took the shot, I think that's the best moment of, like, it just felt very satisfying.
Okay. That's fair, yeah. I agree.
Although you can make an argument for, like, Jimmy and Kim's denouement at the end of the episode. You can make an argument for, you know, Jimmy just telling truth to Chuck at the top of the episode. But I think the Mike taking a shot is the best episode, best part of that. What is the best moment on Fargo?
Oh, it's the scene where Ray and Cy get together and they both give each other the finger.
Yeah.
And Cy drives off in his Hummer, crushing multiple cars on the way out.
So
fantastic.
Which of those moments, rank those moments from best to quote-unquote worst?
So this is the reason we split off best comedy and best drama into categories, because I actually think I enjoyed the scene of the Hummer scene from Fargo a little bit more than I enjoyed the scene from The Leftovers with Regina King and Carrie Coon. But I think the other one was a more impressive scene dramatically. I don't know how to, like, these. It's apples and oranges with comedy and drama.
But I think they're all kind of absurd in their own way. Maybe not the mic shot's not very absurd at all. But, like, I feel like
they're
trampolines
in service of different things. I feel,
yeah.
Like, one is seeking out the comedy. The other is layering comedy onto the drama that it's seeking.
Okay, so we're both going to give it to The Leftovers.
Yeah.
Who is the runner up? Who gets the silver? Who comes in third in the regional bridge final?
I feel like I'm not going to get to say this a lot this season.
Uh-huh.
But I think Fargo takes it.
And it's close.
It's super close.
It's really like in fact, I would say if Fargo, like, I'm grading this boxing wise, Fargo or Leftovers is a 10, and, like, you know, Fargo was a 9 and Better Call Saul was an 8.5. But I don't think, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's super, super close.
Yeah, the margin is real slim. But Fargo entertained me consistently, had me laughing throughout the whole episode.
Big time.
And, you know, the drama that it's setting up is really good. There are a lot of actors in there that are just crushing it. And there weren't, you know, a ton of huge scenes for actors in Better Call Saul this
week,
right?
You think so? Because I thought...
I mean, Jimmy and Kim had, like, a couple, but...
I even thought Chuck and Hay were good.
Chuck and Hay?
Yeah, his scene of him trying to bamboozle that district or the prosecutor and, like... Well, I think he's bamboozling her anyway. Talking about his brother and, oh, I don't know if this is the best for him and all that. I thought that was a really solid performance.
Yeah.
You didn't like it, but I really liked the moments between Jimmy and that other prosecutor, the double Dorito man.
Yeah.
I thought that guy was really, really good and funny. Almost in a, like, who's that dude from The Big Bang Theory?
Like Jim Parsons.
Jim Parsons?
I think it's Parsons.
Anyway, the Bazinga guy.
Yeah.
He has a lot of that kind of nervous, awkward energy that he brought to the scene that I thought paired very well with a subdued Jimmy.
Uh-huh.
So, but I think you're right. I think it goes Leftovers, Fargo, Better Call Saul by a hair.
Yeah.
By a hair.
Very small hair.
I'm kind of worried, though, because I felt like it's so weird because after our podcast, I thought, like, this is the week that Leftovers might be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because it was certainly excellent work across and lots of character moments, but there wasn't, like, just an exclamation point or bullet. And I thought, like, if Better Call Saul, Fargo caught it just right, they might topple it. Going forward, I don't know. They might. It might be Leftovers every week.
Yeah, the Leftovers. I mean, they just do what they do so well. Like, that whole episode is enjoyable, top to bottom. I say that Regina King and Carrie Coon stole the show there, but also there was a great scene with Nora and Kevin. You know, at the end of this thing. Fantastic scene, like you mentioned, with Mark Lynn Baker and Carrie Coon. It's just top to bottom, that episode is enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
And I can't always say the same about the other two shows.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's Who Won the Week. One other thing that I want to talk about, because I know you and I have both seen it.
What's that?
Silicon Valley.
Oh, yeah. Episode one, the premiere.
I was underwhelmed.
Underwhelmed. Like,
in fact,
huh?
I don't think I laughed at any point in the episode.
No.
I mean, I feel like it's setting up conflict and comedy to come, but I didn't find any, and this is in stark contrast to every other season premiere of Silicon Valley, where I found at least one moment that was side-splitting. Mm-hmm. I don't think I even chuckled. Can you think of a moment that was just like laugh-out-loud funny about this one?
Yeah, so I have a very juvenile sense of humor, and when you've got the VC guy at the wrong school, cursing up a fucking storm, using an analogy about fucking a guy, which makes Richard completely uncomfortable in just every way possible. Yeah, I got a few good laughs from that.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's the best probably scene.
It was, yeah.
Especially knowing the background we have with this guy and his douchebaggery.
Right.
Yeah. What did you think of the other thing about this that I don't know about is that every time the technology I've always believed in, like I've always thought, like, okay, yes, it's a game changer. It's like, it's hard to define. It's very hard to define, but like the compression technology they're talking about would definitely be a game changer across many different ways. Richard's internet too.
Oh, I think it's a bad idea.
It seems like the worst. Do you think that's what they're going to explore? That this is the Sean guy made Napster and then nothing ever again. But he's gonna
just an investor. Yeah.
He's gonna take in this arrogance that he's the best and all that. And I thought he was really shitty to Ganesh too.
Yeah.
Much less Guilfoyle. Although I do like the idea of Ganesh.
Is it Dinesh?
Yeah. Is it Dinesh? Ganesh is the elephant head guy.
Right.
Damn it.
Yep.
Dinesh. I like the idea of Dinesh being a CEO. And I like
it's gonna be interesting.
Guilfoyle talking himself through him being okay with that.
Right.
Like, that's like,
that was pretty good.
Either you're going to succeed and I'll be rich and that'll be awesome, or you'll fail and I'll get to have a front row seat of you flaming out.
Right.
Like, that was really good. And also, this is more droll than funny, but I also enjoyed the kind of 360 degree review of everyone saying who should be the CEO before Richard shows up.
Yeah.
So, I
kind of like that Ehrlich is stuck. You know, in his current situation, it's like, fuck, I've got to give everybody my shares because Big Head's dad is running the show here, essentially.
Right.
And he's
not,
a ball buster.
Not having any of it.
Yeah.
He's not going to be charmed. He's not going to be talked out of it. He's not going to be doing anything.
Yeah.
I thought you would get a bigger kick out of the restroom placements.
That was pretty funny, yeah.
Because, you know, that's always been one of our inside jokes is if we had, you know, our own, like, if we had a sham company where we'd have...
Right.
Just outrageous that we do outrageous
things. Yeah, but the idea was always like humiliate the person who has to use the restroom, not the person who is outside watching people use the restroom. I don't know.
What's the woman that works at the VC firm? Angela?
I can't remember her name.
Is it Angela or Karen? But anyway, I don't know. She's actually getting, like, there in the background, there's actually dick on display.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, there was, like, real peen being displayed. Yeah. Hmm. Not as good as, like, the horse fucking of last season. But so like I said, it was, I didn't think it was very funny, but it was a necessary setup because they left things so kind of, like, up in the air last season that they kind of had to do it. There's a lot of stuff that, like, doesn't land. Like, Stephen Tobolowsky's battle with the Hooli founder about who gets dropped off on a private plane. Like, that's just... It's infuriating.
And this thing with Gavin saying, "Oh, I want you to fly it 5 more times just to be sure," and all this stuff. And
right.
Like, that's sure. And, that's funny in the excess, but not really.
As he's ignoring the very vital things about his company. Like, I get it. Like, I don't understand how Hooli is still a business, honestly.
Or how he's the CEO.
I mean, they've got nothing but setback after setback, and he's a terrible CEO. And, like, it's infuriating that it's still part of the show. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I think Gavin needs to, like, I don't know what they're going to do to revitalize that role and that relationship, because he's not even a good foil. He's he's like Dr. Claude, Inspector Gadget. They're both so incompetent that it's like there's no tension there.
So here's where I think the season is going to go. I think Richard's going to have quit the company and decided to work on this
which there has been an internet too.
There hasn't. It failed.
And you listening to this podcast have never heard about it,
right?
Because it's a terrible idea.
So I think he's going to go back to the guy who said, "Oh yeah, I would totally fund that." And the guy's going to say, "Well, I said I would fund it. I didn't say I am funding it or something." You know, he's going to have some bullshit reason not to fund it. And Richard's going to have to go to Gavin. Like, Gavin will have this big battle with Tobolowsky.
Well, he threw a gauntlet. Like, you have to have X amount of million, like, users, and you have to have this amount of weekly growth. And that's just – he's never going to get that with internet, too.
Right.
Ever, ever.
Right.
Never, ever.
Yeah. So I think Gavin and Tobolowsky, whatever his character is, are going to have some battle. And Gavin's going to be looking for an opportunity. And they're going to team up somehow. I feel like I've seen a preview where – Richard is going
Gavin
to Gavin.
And Richard?
Yeah.
Well, that would be one way to shake things up and make it interesting.
Right.
Because both are kind of incompetent in their own ways, and both are arrogant in their own ways with massive blind spots. Okay, that would be potentially interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I figure every couple weeks we'll check in on that, too, to see.
Okay.
Because that's a challenge covering comedy. It's essentially, wasn't it funny when, or it wasn't especially funny when.
Yeah.
And I think that's all we have to talk about this week. All right. In the future Bald Move TV, we continue. Got the linchpin of who won the week. But we'll be talking in the weeks to come about Handmaiden's Tale. We'll be talking about American Gods. And I might give like a final review of the Mystery Science Theater if people are interested in that, and just this other stuff that's coming up along the way. I don't think there's anything else I'm too excited about, but I'm sure people in the forums will remind me if I'm missing something. But we'll be back with another one, Bald Move TV, next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Have a nice weekend.